I'll say the Grand Recliner was delightful, except for one crucial thing.
It doesn't recline.
It did not recline, except for the set angle of it, which you could argue was reclined.
It's not bad. It's like, my theory is that it's a lazy, lazy boy. It's so lazy, it just couldn't be bothered reclining.
That's right.
It's like the ultra lazy boy.
That's right.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schranko. Helping you build your business super fast.
So here we go.
Here we go.
Year three.
Year three of...
This is the second issue of the Manly Chronicles, though, isn't it? I think you don't recognize a pattern until the second.
Well, this transforms what was an N1 episode.
Okay, yes.
Into a serialized podcast.
That's exactly right.
Part two.
Yes.
Of X.
So I said we do 25 years.
Yeah. So part two of 25.
Yes, two of 25.
Welcome, Dean Jackson, to Manly Australia.
This has been a great week, James, as always.
Why do you come to Manly? Just out of curiosity, because I have an annual event, and a good chunk of those visitors are from overseas. But for everyone who comes, there might be 10 who think, oh, that's a long way.
No, it is a long way, I'm not going to lie. I mean, it took me 26 hours door-to-door to get here on planes, trains, and automobiles.
Very.
And I flew. To get here, I conquered the current longest flight in the sky, which is the Dallas to Sydney leg of the journey, 17 hours.
Very nice.
Yes.
So why do you do it?
You know, I love coming to Australia. It's a nice... This is my third trip now. Mm-hmm. And so the first time, it was kind of a bucket list adventure.
Yep.
You know, scratch Australia off the list. And then it's turned into the third annual once-in-a-lifetime trip to Australia.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I always like catching up with you. We spend a fair bit of time...
We do.
...discussing things. And a tradition is we usually sort of recap some of the top thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
It gives us a year to sort of mull them over.
It's true.
Come up with some new stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I have to say that so the nice thing, we reflect... Because we haven't done any reflecting. We've mostly been... living.
Yep.
So if we reflect on the week here, we seem to have a tradition of starting out at the pantry.
Yep.
Which is one of my favorite places, right on the beach in Manly. And so right, you know, you arrive. I left Saturday night, just for people who are going to be coming from the States.
Yep.
Just to paint a picture of what that journey looks like.
East Coast.
Yes. So I came from Orlando. So I came about as far as you can possibly come from the United States to come to Australia. And I was anxious to try this new Dallas to Sydney leg. Because normally on this journey, I'll fly to Los Angeles and spend a couple of days and then go to LA and fly from LA. But this time I thought, okay, let's just try this. I flew straight from, I left my house at 4:30 in the afternoon on a Saturday.
Yep.
And my flight to Dallas from Orlando was slightly delayed and due to weather, and I arrived in Dallas at exactly the time they were boarding the flight to Sydney, two gates down, so I didn't have to run all over Dallas airport to get to the gate. Just like a gentleman walked off and started boarding the other flight.
Yep.
And then I got all settled in my cozy cocoon for a 17-hour journey, which, you know, my strategy is to, because it's 10:30 at night at that time, so my strategy is to try and stay up as late as I can. And so I watched a movie and watched a couple of little documentary things on TV. I had a meal.
Yep.
And then fell asleep. And I slept for, thanks to my new Fitbit, I was resting for a total of 11 hours of the whole of the journey, which makes a big difference. And I'm not going to say it's fully restful, blissful sleep, because even the lay flat pods in a, you know, on an airline have their limitations. So, but it was, you know, I'm not going to say it wasn't.
I've often slept 10 or 11 hours of a 14-hour Los Angeles flight, because they typically leave LA at night.
Yes.
They serve a little meal, have a glass of wine, and then a glass of water, and I'm gone.
Right. That's the thing. So then anyway, arriving, you know, I watched another movie and then read a little bit, and you arrive into Sydney at 6:30 in the morning, go through the express lane for customs, and then my friend Jesse traditionally picks me up, and we have a nice visit, and then we end up at the pantry. And this year we had James and Tacky Moore came and joined us for breakfast. So we had a nice morning there. And then I got a great bed and breakfast from an Airbnb place right on the beach, a little bit further up from you, James, which was normally... Last year I was right in the same building as you.
Which wasn't going to work this time.
Which wasn't going to work this time because of the elevator maintenance.
Yeah.
So James, we were doing a lot of steps. I averaged about almost 8,000 steps a day while we were here. But James averaged that many steps plus at least 13 flight journeys up and down the stairs while the elevators are being serviced.
And a little surf each day.
And a surf.
So it's a kind of place where you don't really need a car. Some people
ask me.
That's
what I love about it.
Know, do they need to rent a car? And I say, no.
No, it's
no, you don't. We caught the ferry to the city during
the stay. Yes, we did. It was wonderful.
Easy to do that. How's the food and restaurants?
Ah, we had a great time. I mean, so this was an interesting thing. So we were doing a little, you know, testing, restaurant testing on the way. So typically we would have, I think we had basically all of our meals together for the whole week. So we would start out for breakfast, and there's one in between us. There were three restaurants side by side. This is an interesting marketing test. So one in the middle, Jellyfish, is just clearly the most popular of the three.
Yeah, always the most busy.
Yes. Now, interesting enough, they have the most interesting name.
Yep.
They also have the most interesting design.
Colors.
Colors, bright, very colorful.
Aqua blue.
They have the most, you know, I think...
Best theming.
Relevant theming in a beach surf community. They've got the interior theming is
surfboards on the wall.
Yes.
Looks very beachy.
Yeah, yeah. And I wonder if they have the advantage of being the middle of the three restaurants.
I suspect that it's a Goldilocks scenario.
Yes.
It's the one in the middle. People tend to take the middle option.
I think that may be true. But we actually put all that aside, and we tested all three, and we judged them based on food, service, and their coffee.
Yeah.
And we found a clear winner, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah.
I
think so, too.
Yeah.
I think it would encourage me to go back there.
Yes. And so the winner wasn't the most popular one. In fact, the service was the least friendly in that one, I would say.
In which one?
In Jellyfish.
Oh, yeah. Well, the popular one has hot and cold service.
Right.
You can be left to your own devices.
Yeah.
If you ask for water, they'll never bring it.
No.
And I think they trade a bit too much on their fact that they're busy.
Yes.
It removes a bit of their requirement to be service oriented.
Yeah.
It's almost like that hire car company that says, we try harder.
Mm.
You know?
Yes.
The other ones have to try a bit harder because...
And maybe that's it.
There's
the food
people.
Is better. I will give them that they have the best coffee.
They have great coffee.
Yeah, the Jellyfish coffee is the best.
And it is a coffee culture society.
Yes.
The food is great. The service isn't the best.
And so I think you can Yeah, I think you can take away from that. I mean, that, so Ash, what's it, what was it called?
Ash's Table.
It's not a power name.
It's a weird name.
It doesn't really mean anything.
It's kind of got the most basic smattering of surf culture.
Yes.
A couple of pictures on the wall.
Yes.
And it's the most obscured from the public. It has more protection at the front.
Yes.
Which might appeal to older people who don't want the wind.
And by protection, you mean a plastic layering. It's, most of these are open air at the front. That's really what I love about Manly, is this just beach sense of it, you know?
The service was very good at there. Mm-hmm. Really good service. They're constantly monitoring and swooping and checking in. Happy to customize anything.
Yeah. It was delightful. We discovered...
But it was the most empty every day.
Yeah. So we could go and get a table for whatever.
A booth, a table.
Whatever we felt like.
Didn't feel pressured to move on because they're trying to churn through covers for the day.
Yes.
And the food was great and the coffee was the second best.
That's right.
The third one was the worst experience, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. The Honolulu Grill.
It had a bit of surfing theme. Service was terrible. Everything was,
let's be honest,
too different. There's plenty of
they don't take well to exceptions to any kind of I had to prevail on them that I in fact had money and would be willing to pay a premium for my desire. It wasn't immediately clear that they could give me what I wanted and adjust the price.
There was problems, wasn't there?
There was problems, right?
We didn't even graduate to not a problem.
Right.
We got just straight problem.
That's funny.
We were talking about the service staff's word track of not a problem.
Mm.
And it's like a double negative. It's a not and a problem. Why throw that in there at all? It doesn't...
Yeah. No problem.
At best, it cancels to neutral, but it doesn't take you any further more positive.
Yeah, it's compared to, as we discussed, my pleasure.
Sure.
My pleasure. It is amazing how words matter.
Another
Aussie saying
is too easy.
Too easy.
Yeah. Mm. So that's even more fun than not a problem.
Okay, too easy.
Too easy.
Wow.
That's
think you're trying to challenge me? That's too easy.
Is that the best you got?
Yeah.
But not even a customized bread?
Well, this would probably be a good point to bring up the power of words, because we actually, appearances and words and preconceptions can sometimes lead you down the wrong path.
Often.
As we discovered yesterday.
Yes.
In Kolaroi. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, Kolaroi.
Kolaroi. There you go. So James and I decided we'd been going to movies. We had one great movie at Sydney.
Dundee?
At the Dundee theaters. We went and saw Iris, which you can check out our video review on Facebook. Then we decided we set out to go see the new Woody Allen movie, Irrational Man, which was playing at Kolaroi. And when we got there, we were seduced, I'll say is the right word, by the anticipated pleasure of sitting in the grand recliner section of the theater, which was only available in Theater One, which was playing a movie called
Five Levels Up
or Five Flights Up or something like that. It was a movie that was...
Interesting, you've forgotten it after
one
day.
I've just buried it because on the surface, again, it looked like it was going to be a great movie. It looked like it had all the makings. It had Morgan Freeman. It had Diane Keaton. It was set in New York. I mean, it had all of the things that you would think how could we really go wrong? We're going to be sitting in the grand recliner being entertained by two of the greatest actors of our generation. Yet, it failed on every front. It was perhaps the most atrocious collection of movie cliches that I've ever experienced, acted out in a community theater, let's make a movie kind of way.
And what's supposed to be a delightful, warm, soft, romantic little story evoked anger in me.
James was actually fuming. He really...
I was angry at that.
Yeah, movie. I wasn't angry. I didn't care that much, but it was just... anyway, just to show you, you can get steered wrong, even when everything, all appearances look like they're going to be right. Now, I'll say the Grand Recliner was delightful, except for one crucial thing.
It doesn't recline.
It did not recline, except for the set angle of it, which you could argue was reclined.
It's not bad. It's like my theory is that it's a lazy boy. It's so lazy, it just couldn't be bothered reclining.
That's right.
It's like the ultra lazy boy.
That's right. So that's the...
So we need to use IMDb as a filter.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to have checks and balances. Same as if you're interviewing someone.
I use Rotten Tomatoes and a lot of times.
I prefer IMDb.
Okay.
But the, you know, if it doesn't meet a certain threshold, it's out.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a good movie purely because it helps us identify a good movie when we see one.
Well, that's true.
It gives us a position of contrast.
And gives you further evidence. I used it as evidence in a lunchtime discussion. We had lunch with Taki, and we were discussing the idea of ideas versus execution, and I used that as a perfect example of ideas being more valuable than execution, because that was... You could say that movie was executed flawlessly. It was executed. It was shot nicely. Everything was in frame. The sound was perfect. Everything was there. But it was a bad idea.
Could you also argue that the movie is a good idea, but it was poorly executed?
I don't think that the movie was a good idea, actually. No, I mean, it was just a collection of bad ideas all around.
Even the core premise was very weak.
Right.
It wasn't a believable premise.
Right.
Every aspect, it was unbelievable. So it didn't work. It didn't compel. It didn't move.
That's it.
It was nothing.
That's right. See?
So interesting. So there was one idea. We've also been tossing around ideas around Pareto principles and filtering things that are more valuable or less valuable.
Yes. Now that, so we've had some interesting discussions about that because, you know, I love for things like this, and I think that there's some value. I'm a believer in the 80-20 rule. I'm a believer in Dan Sullivan's 80% approach, which is sort of a related but not exactly the same type of thing. Dan's basic premise is that in most situations, 80% is more than enough in most situations.
And the 80-20 power curve shows that to be true.
Mm-hmm.
We did a comparison between doing 4% of something versus 16% of something, and there was quite a minimal
difference.
Return. You know, it's the difference between 64% of the result
and from 70
4% being done versus 70 something.
Yeah.
If you do 16% of something.
Right.
But then if you do the other, you know, 74%, you're really only potentially getting 30% more
for now, doing I think so much that more there's, effort. I think that in order for Pareto to really work the most effectively, I think we were looking for, this was our breakfast discussion, is that I think there are situations where it does not apply. And I think that where it gets mixed up, so let me just get this out here and we'll throw it all out on the table. We can arrange it and mix it up here how it fits out. That I believe that there are things that work in conjunction with the idea of the minimum effective dose. I really like that idea that there's something that reaches a point where the minimum effective dose, and then there's also the corollary to that, which would be the maximum effective dose, where if you're taking, if you're doing something where there are degrees of something that can be measured, and you could get the result, you get the minimum effective result with this dosing or this amount, then anything else beyond that has the diminishing returns. But how do you balance that out when we were talking about if our thing, when you almost like when you bring in the laws of physics into something, physical things, that there seems to be a limitation in that. Like we were talking about, can you, you know, if our goal was to walk from the restaurant where we were to the ferry, that you can't get the result of getting to the ferry by doing 20% of the distance to the ferry. Well, nor can you do it with 80%. You have to, there are some things that, that the minimum effective dose is to get to the ferry. And that, but you brought up some other things. Is there alternate things? What's your goal? Exactly. But
I think to, firstly, to use the formula, you have to consider 100% of something.
Yes.
So you can't just say a small percentage of something. So you maybe have to zoom out till you capture at least 100% of the thing.
Yes.
So if getting from one place to another is 100%, then you could say which things are the most important in terms of getting there. One factor might be taking the most direct possible route. So having good navigation might be more important. If you don't have the most direct possible route, you could take three times longer to get there or travel three times the distance. Then you might be thinking transportation thing. What's the return on energy for my sneakers versus buying a skateboard and skating to the ferry? I might be able to do it with less effort in a faster time. So I think it, maybe it's just breaking down the various components of that mission. It's the transportation device, it's the direction. You could get in a taxi and get there way quicker with no energy expended. So I guess you've got to say, well, of all the variables, what's the most important element here? Is it how I get there? Is it which route that I take? Is it how long it takes to get there? Is it how much it costs to get there? And depending on which criteria is more important, you could probably optimize the journey by focusing on the bits that make that happen and ignoring the other bits.
Right. Yeah, you, I mean, it is interesting because I am a fan of doing the least thing. I think that that requires, I think you need more input. Just like you said, you have to be aware of what is the outcome that you need. What's the outcome that you're looking for? I was just reading an article about the way that Spotify and Apple calculate the royalty pool to give to artists on their streaming music service. And on Apple, for instance, 20 seconds of streaming is enough to trigger the royalty.
Yep.
Okay. So if you were, you know, an artist trying to maximize your revenue on a streaming service, it doesn't make, it would seem efficient to write 21 second songs
and have
more of them, because it's not the streaming time, it's not the amount of minutes streamed, it's the songs streamed. It's not, I think that you have to be aware of the environment.
Well, that's, it's all about setting the rules or setting the frame. If you're selling something, you can teach a customer how to score you or how to select you over a different competitor by setting the frame. Like, you get to create the rules. So it always comes back to the point. What's the point? I'm constantly thinking that people have never really sat down and thought about the point of doing the things. They go and build businesses that they then hate because it's too complex or sucks up their entire life energy. And then they think, why did I do this? And that's actually what annoyed me the most about that lame movie, was that it was completely pointless. The whole exercise that they were going through had no point, no valid point in my mind. There was a weak point, but it wasn't a good enough reason.
Yeah, that whole, I mean, listening to our discussion, it would seem that we've been like eating brownies and, you know.
What do you mean by that?
It seems like we've been consuming some sort of enhanced brownies or something. Well, to have these deep philosophical discussions
here. I think we have those discussions because we can.
Yeah.
And we ramble in all sorts of areas. Like we explore good questions in each other's business situation.
That is true.
One thing that I'm always interested in is what can you see that I can't see?
Yes.
And then you reverse that across, and what can I see that you can't see? Mm-hmm. That's one of the best ways to leverage an existing resource. It's like it's a totally a Jay Abraham or an L.A. Goldratt thing. It's an obvious answer to something that's right under your nose,
right,
that you couldn't see.
Yes.
And it's something like, I'm always seeing stuff with my own students because that's what I do.
Yeah, right.
And they're asking questions. I can see it so clearly, and often they can't. And I just say, huh. But we have to be open to what other people can see about us.
Yeah.
And then we have to filter it according to what we actually want. What's the point? Is that the problem with advice? Most people give advice according to their filters, not the person who's asking for its advice.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we did have a lot of great discussions this week. Well, we always do. Time just, it flies, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, one of the interesting things this trip is that I felt much more at ease having the discussions because things business-wise are working along quite smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
Had more things happening by the team now, mm-hmm, than what I was doing last year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been good. And of course, I'm much, much more engaged into my surfing. That's been a daily requirement in the routine.
Mm-hmm.
And
that is nice. Like, you know, we have a very similar rhythm to our days. Like that, this is the rhythm of my days normally. So it's easy for our rhythms to mesh up in a way. Because it's the same. Yeah, your rhythm of getting in the surfing into the equation right from the get-go makes a big difference.
What other concepts have we talked about?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is very interesting. We had a little adventure. For some reason, the cord on my MacBook was not connecting, not charging my MacBook. So I asked James if he had an extra one. And we, because of the 13 flight stair climb, we concocted a wonderful plan, which involved some wonderful, packaging techniques by James, wrapping up a charger in a paper bag, putting that in another paper bag.
It was putting that
in a plastic bag.
It's actually a stiff brown paper bag with crumple zones. I drew back onto my auto industry knowledge.
So we had the whole...
Yep, it was designed to land beautifully, and then it was wrapped in a hard plastic bag that gave it an outer shell.
So I was down at the bottom, 13 floors below, and we had sort of agreed on a landing area, and James
selected a very large
pretty large landing area, and James threw it over. I was quite impressed with the descent. It was very like pillowy and like a control parachute almost coming down. I was expecting it to like land harder, and then at the very last minute a gust of wind landed it on somebody's balcony on the first floor.
Level one.
It was a foot away from glory. If it had been a foot lower, it would have bounced off the side of their balcony and come straight down.
And we think it's something to do with the vortex under the building.
Yes.
Wind rush. I saw it go down beautifully, and at the very last second, it just disappeared from view.
It sucked it in.
And we had to then come up with alternative sort of situational plans. What do we do? Do we scale the balcony at risk getting arrested or breaking a bone? Do we find someone with a ladder? We went up to the unit, but there was no one there. because their flyer from 3 weeks ago is still there. And so we came up with an idea of drawing a diagram.
What actually happened, the flight path that actually happened, the intended flight path.
And
what could possibly go wrong?
I sent you an illustration of a cartoon character with a little animal that had landed on its head accidentally.
Oh, man.
We got there eventually.
That's so funny. But anyway, you found another charger for me, so no problem. And now, of course, I'm heading to Melbourne, and Australia's single largest Apple fanboy,
Ed Dale will certainly
be able to accommodate me with an extra charger. He's got the Museum of Apple Product History.
Yes, he must. So you will be well...
I'll be in good hands.
Powered up.
So what else did we talk about that was...
Well, we talked about some good books and documentaries. We always share those things that have been interesting for you.
Yes.
Or I. You borrowed a book from the Shramco Book Library.
Yes, the Shramco Lending Library.
And that was the 7-day weekend.
Yes.
Which really is a whole book about a very different way of running a business.
Well, it's an interesting... The beginning of it is very... You know, it is an interesting idea, is where did the weekend go? That was the question he was asking, that it was long ago that the work week started encroaching onto the weekend.
Yes, and with technology, it just blended.
Yeah, and then he realized, well, the only way to, if they're going to come this way, then why can't we send a little bit of the weekend encroaching into the week?
And he has this whole idea that a business should get people who could serve themselves first and the business second.
Mm-hmm.
And so someone wants to work for a company like that.
Yeah, now you read more thoroughly than I did. I just got to glance through. So what were the positive takeaways from that idea of a 7-day weekend?
I think the main point is we should question why we're doing anything in our business. Why do we measure hours? Why do we measure 9 to 5? Why do we have policies or placards or stupid company mottos that are meaningless, that if you switch them with some other company would be exactly the same?
Mm-hmm.
We endeavor to serve customers with the best possible service, blah blah blah, like it's all
honesty, integrity.
Yeah. I mean, that's just silly stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about removing controls a little bit, empowering people to do what they're supposed to do, even letting them choose what they want to do and how much they get paid and if they want to come to a meeting or not, or if they'd rather take a call from the family. It's their choice. So it's a democratic way of operating the business. And in his case, it's turned out to be a 30-year experiment, very profitable, low turnover. The key lessons from a business perspective are that they seek out complex markets where they can be the number one player and that they can then cross-sell their other business divisions once they acquire the same customer. And the same customer for completely different unrelated business units.
Mm-hmm.
They could be doing the payroll for a company and also making electric engines for them. So they go for very big customers.
That makes sense. Now, it was really interesting because in the beginning, I have one of my favorite notations that you had was in the beginning when James, they're listing all these things. We don't have any goals, no 5-year plans, no this, and James is writing up on the thing, bullshit. And then see page 197, see page 37, see page 93, and he's circling, there's no goal, there's no 5-year plan. And then on page 137, it says, well, our goal in the 5-year plan is to go to $1 billion.
Exactly. It's like,
it was pretty funny.
When I read the first part, it sounded too good to be true.
Right.
So my cynical radar comes on and I'm looking for it. And sure enough, it comes back in later in the book. So it was a bit hypocritical.
Yeah.
And I dismiss quite a lot of what he says based on the fact that he contradicts himself in the book.
Right.
As do just about almost every author does, by the way.
Yes.
And I think that, again, question everything. Is that because someone wrote something, it doesn't mean that that's the only way or the best way.
Right.
Or even that it works at all. You have to put on your a question hat and filter as you go, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I scribble all through the book and I write my notes in the back. Yeah. But what I did as a result is I really had some great discussions with my team.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, listen, I think I want you, if we don't have much work on in the afternoon, then go to the mall with your family, have the afternoon off, and then catch up a little bit at a different time when we do need some. And last night, sure enough, I needed something coded on a site fairly urgently, and my best best coder in the team fixed it in 3 minutes flat on a Friday night at after hours. But then I said, listen, make sure you take time off from this to compensate for it. So yeah, it's about not slave driving or over controlling people in your business.
Right. Yeah, I like that. It's a good soundbite too, the 7-day weekend.
It's a clever name.
Yeah, and that is a good premise because I think we really do lead sort of more blended lives in a way.
Exactly.
You know, but I think ultimately that comes down to the daily rhythm.
Your routine is everything, and I've still got your printout stuck to my filing cabinet in my garage that I know I'm being successful with.
Yes.
You really encouraged me with the lifestyle design with that thing, and you've been living that way for a while now.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting is I didn't really realize, like, that now is, you know, I first started that in 1998, 99, you know, completely finished in by 2000 for sure. And, you know, really having polished them and really thought them through, they're equally applicable today as they were the day that I wrote them, because they were written in a way that allowed for growth.
An evergreen approach.
Yes, they weren't aspirational or sort of, you know, check that off sort of a thing. Like, yeah. I always look back at, you know, the one that's pivotal is my number three. I know I'm being successful when I'm working on projects I'm excited about and doing my very best work. So I don't see a time when I'm not working, when I'm not doing something because I enjoy it so much.
Well, there you
go.
But
I'm working on projects. I'm not stuck in something that is like an ongoing thing. I'm making stuff up and making it real and setting up little teams and situations that make something recur, you know. But working on projects I'm excited about and doing my very best work gives me that. There's lots of freedom in that there's my very best work today is better than my very best work 5 years ago, because I'm a different person.
You might call them a set of guidelines.
Yeah.
My metaphor for that would be setting train tracks.
Yeah.
Because the train can chug up and down that for the rest of its life. Like, mm-hmm. there's still train tracks now going between places that were laid down in the beginning.
Mm.
You know, they cleared the path, put down the sleepers, and hammered those tracks in, and they're still getting hammered today. Just trains going up and down and up and down the track. They won't veer from those guidelines because they were set.
That makes sense.
Yeah. That's how I help people make progress, is we think about what station we want to get to.
Yes.
We think about where they are now, and then we lay down the tracks, and then we start firing up the engine. We shovel the coal in, and then we hire someone to shovel the coal, and then we hire someone to drive the train. And that's how we build something great. We make progress. And then, of course, occasionally there'll be logs on the track, so we have to clear them.
That's
what the weekly call is. It's about checking which station we're at, if there's any logs on the track, and making sure we keep shoveling coal.
Hmm. That's interesting. Have you read or Dan Sullivan talk about this idea of the three paths of make it up, make it real, and make it recur?
I haven't.
And it's kind of an interesting thing because of that's been a big distinction for me in the last year or so, of understanding what my role in things is. I'm definitely, as an entrepreneur, I'm a make it up kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Like, I like to think of something new. Like, I'll use the 90-minute book team as an example of something that is, I made this up, this idea of creating a book in 90 minutes, then made it real by creating what the protocols would have to be to do that, and then built a team around it to where now that whole business operates without any involvement from me, because I'm not a make it recur kind of a guy. That I'm not the guy to...
I call them a bus driver.
A bus driver, okay.
Someone who likes doing the same route over and over and over again.
Right.
There's bus drivers.
Yes.
And then there's the, you know, the designers and the dreamers and the innovators who like to create new stuff all the time.
Yeah. That's what I like. I think that's the thing, right? Is that's the thing. And I've really taken on embracing my bovinity this last few years, but this year particularly. My whole organization is set up now to, you know, embrace the idea that I am an idea cow, a cash cow, that I make milk and that's it. And to realize that anything that is not making the milk is really not something that I should be doing. And so that's been a big difference for me. I think that's probably the biggest thing over the last 12 months, is to really fully embrace that.
Well, that's closely related to the task transfer that I've been undergoing and passing on to others. Mm-hmm. And that is listing out everything that I do.
Yeah.
And then transfer it to someone else.
Right.
More or less the same thing. So that I can be focused. And I'm also aware of...
But then you have to be aware. This is what we call that. We do that exact same thing.
Yeah.
But then we draw the line linearly on that and say, where is the milk line?
Yeah, which tasks?
Yeah, which ones are
not transferable?
Milk? Yeah.
Or shouldn't be transferred. It's like I pull the tasks that I want to do and I pass everything else. I still like making podcasts.
Yeah.
So that task doesn't get transferred yet. But then I don't like sending broadcast emails, so I transferred that one.
Yes.
And that's been great.
Yes, me too. Yeah, I love that. If you can get to, you know, for anybody broadcasting things, you know, the milk is the actual...
The talent.
Yeah, the email, the words that you're saying. And so we get to a point where the most technical tool that I aspire to use is Gmail. You know, that if I send a Gmail.
I like to just talk. That's my preferred number one activity.
Right.
And then I just put the recording somewhere. After this call, I'd literally forward the audio that comes back from Orphonic to a team member, and everything else will happen. Blog post and email will happen.
All done.
All done.
Yeah, that's great.
Getting close to the airport now, Dean.
Look at us.
Are you excited?
We've made good time.
Oh.
I'm excited. This is going to be my first time in Melbourne.
I will have to reroute us to the domestic airport, though.
Yes, okay. You were about to take me to international.
I was thinking about it. On further reflection, I'll just make sure it's the correct one.
Okay. That's funny.
It is. It's an easy thing to do because this is where I took you last.
That's right. And normally when I come here,
it's a trick.
I'm not traveling domestically.
It's a trick.
But this is my nice strategy of my stress-free travel is we're arriving at the airport. I don't have a ticket yet, but knowing that they have one every hour on the hour, this way we can get up and we had a great breakfast.
Well, we removed and a great time chat. Constraints.
Yeah, there's no... And that's one of the things. Whenever possible, I love to eliminate time.
That had a real flow-on effect. It meant that I could... Surf without a watch.
Right.
I don't like to surf with a watch.
Right.
And
yeah, because if I had to be there at a certain time, then you're all of a sudden.
Then I would have put
the
on
clock
my,
is ticking, and I don't even know what time it is. Actually,
12, I actually have a watch that I wear for surfing.
Yeah,
that is a dull plastic,
mm.
so it doesn't reflect like a
right.
fish scales, which can attract
yes
fish, big fish with teeth. So I don't wear a watch if there's no time constraint, and I'll surf until I feel done.
Mm. And that's always the best way to do everything, isn't it?
It is the best way.
Yeah.
It's a choice.
Mm.
That's probably the most important thing. You can make decisions that give you different results than other decisions.
So now the good thing is we get here and I'll figure out whatever, what's the next. I'm not going to rush. I'll take the second next flight. Not the one I have to run through the gate and might make it.
Exactly.
We'll take the one after that one. And a gentleman never runs. I want the sophisticated gentleman pace. Look at this golf course right by the airport here. That's interesting.
Yes. There's actually some of Sydney's finest golf courses are near the airport.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. The most exclusive one is. Then there's other ones way out west. No internet at all. Riverside Oaks.
Mm.
There's ones by the sea. We saw one yesterday.
In Colorado.
Yeah. I
have to bring my golf clubs one time. Do you golf?
I do. Very poorly. I golf maybe once a year.
Okay.
I used to do the corporate golf days.
Yes.
Mercedes-Benz. And it was okay then because it's good to let the customers beat you. And, you know, let them show you how it works.
Yeah.
Feel special. You don't want to beat the customers. They get really cross. And I noticed, here's something, I don't know if you found this true or not, but I have. People play golf the same way they do business. The customers who cheat at golf are the cheaters in business. Mm. The ones who want to have their invoice made out to a different name or different amount, dodge tax and stuff. Or try and pay you in cash. They're the ones who will move a ball or not count a stroke.
Right.
You know, have you found that?
I have. It is interesting. I mean, well, it parallels. I mean, that people who get angry on the golf course tend to be people who get angry in life. Like, dude, what is there to... Why are you angry on the golf course? I mean, we're golfing. Nobody cares, right, if you miss a shot or... I don't know. It's... I never understood that.
Well, I guess they've got a lot of expectation on themselves.
That might be a character flaw on my part. The whole, I don't know whether I shared this with you, that my, the reason the 80% approach kind of resonates with me too, but I found some elementary school report cards at my mom's house. And I was looking through them, and you know, they would hand write in the comments at the time. And the comment that kind of summed it all up was that Dean is able to achieve excellent results with what seems like little effort. Imagine if he applied himself.
Right.
That was the overriding thing. The general comment from my third grade teacher, Mrs. Jefferson.
So you had minimum effective dose dialed.
I really had that dialed in then. I look back on it and I realize that's really what was happening, I guess.
The problem with school that I've found is when I go to the parent-teacher nights with my kids is that teachers, they're scoring them the wrong way. My daughter got penalized for delivering a presentation on a topic and then she wrote a book on the same topic and she got penalized for not doing a different topic. And I asked the teacher if she'd actually specified that it must be a different topic, and she said no, but she would have expected that to really for her to stretch. And I said, well, like in the real world, syndication is a really valid way to demonstrate you know, that you're using multiple mediums to get a core message out there. Like, it's rewarded in the real world.
Yes.
You wouldn't go and write completely separate things. There's no leverage of your IP.
Right.
You're not able to...
Nobody teaches IP in school. It's so funny, isn't it? Yeah.
My 15-year-old was telling me the other day, that he, in his business class, they said, right, let's make a product. And he was paired off with his buddies, and they're saying, let's make it expensive so we make more money. And my kid's saying, don't worry so much about the price. We can probably make it a little lower. What we really want is frequency. We want to get
it on a recurring subscription.
We want to get paid 10 or 12 or 15 times,
yes.
even if it's a little less.
Yes.
We make it a lower barrier to entry so they can get started on it and stay a lifetime customer. And they're all just looking at him like he's an alien.
That's so great. It is funny. I mean, you know, all entrepreneur, the kids of entrepreneurs, it's always entrepreneurs that are, you know, realizing how the education system isn't equipping kids for reality.
That's right.
And I think it's really because we all, you know, none of the entrepreneur folks I know were class valedictorian, for instance, because there's really, as we get back down to it, it's kind of a diminishing return.
Peter Thiel's really onto that one.
Is he? Yeah.
Yeah, he's really. And Peter Drucker was also onto it in the 60s. They had some really good points. They're just teaching kids to regurgitate things or to research.
I just saw this billboard here that said ride sharing is no safer than hitchhiking. It's anti-Uber propaganda at the airport going here.
Oh, yeah, we don't like the fact that we're missing out on the tax.
Oh, that's something.
There's a big campaign against Uber in Australia.
Yeah.
And Airbnb.
Interesting.
Taxi companies don't like losing the monopoly.
No, I'm a fan of both of those. They're disruptors.
Well, they also don't really own anything. It's a very clever business model.
That was where I was sharing you when I met Salim Ismail, who wrote Exponential Organizations, and that's a whole, you know, study of all of these companies and the things that they do, and that's had a big impact on the stuff we've been doing. Well, here we are.
We are here.
Another successful... Oh,
which airline are you?
Entry, Qantas. Well, I haven't bought a ticket yet, but I'm going to be on Qantas.
We just go one more in that case.
Yeah.
This is the Virgin.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to go on Qantas.
So if we get you to the right airport...
and at the right counter.
The right counter, then we've really got it all figured out.
Oh, so we're not at Terminal 2, we're at another terminal.
We just need to go...
Okay, one more. See, that's...
Just one more.
Okay, good.
So as Drucker said, it's all about doing the right things instead of doing things right.
Mm. Yeah, it is interesting. So I feel good that really my whole school career, if I reframe it, has
more appropriate.
I was, and that's what Dan Sullivan said. And he'll continue to get excellent results as long as he continues with his path of little effort.
Very good. What a great way to finish. Okay. Dean, I'm going to set
there we
you
go.
Down.
This is a wrap on the Manly wrap. Chronicles episode 2.
Thank you again.
It's been delightful.
See you next year.
Yes, sir.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.